saw guitars, but maybe not going to happen today. Okay, my bad. But we do have a fantastic lineup tomorrow in News and Public Affairs Day. Whoa, what a bunch of wonderful things coming up. And it's because of you that we're doing it. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Make that call. Make your commitment to community radio.
Absolutely.
Join us. And it doesn't take a huge amount of money. As little as $40 makes you a KBOO member for a full year. Now, if you can afford a little bit more, it's been suggested that you look around and say, okay, what is my hourly wage? Could I put my hourly wage aside 1 day a month for KBOO Radio?
Hmm.
1 hour of work a month for my community radio station. Do you tune in for more than an hour a month? Maybe, maybe. 877-500-5266. That's the number to call. Make the commitment, make the pledge, and call us up today.
That's right.
We'd love to hear from you.
That's right. And help keep local produced radio shows like Rose City Native, which is coming up here shortly, on the air, that reaches out to the Native people here locally in Portland and around Oregon. And I know that Rose City Native is produced every week, which is hard to do. It's not easy to do, to produce a weekly show as the next people coming up to help encourage you to support, like Dell and the Prison Pipeline Collective does every week. They always are putting on shows every week to produce to you, to bring you to bring you local news and public affairs. And while I mention Prison Pipeline, I wanted to send a shout out to Yahuru Sasa Collective in the Oregon State Penitentiary. I've got to visit them a few months ago, and they've been on KBOO airwaves, and so we are able to have you, Huru Sasa, on KBOO airwaves because of you, dear listeners, for helping us keep the lights on, keep the airwaves rolling. And we need you to dial 877-500-5266 right now to pledge your support for a great radio station.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:01. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
...2015 Artist-in-Residence applications are available. The KBOO Community Radio Artist-in-Residence program assists artists working creatively with sound. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KBOO mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The goals of the program are to support and invest in individuals who are pushing themselves artistically using sound and to bring those artists into the dynamic KBOO community of local, national, international artists and activists. Deadline for applications are February 13, 2015, 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/AIR2015.
Do you see it? It's all around us. It's an assault on our rights, our freedoms, our food, our jobs, and ultimately an assault on the only life support system we have, Mother Earth. The time for action is now.
All day, Friday, February 13th, it's KBOO's semi-annual News and Public Affairs Day, featuring the very best in talks, speeches, and interviews produced by KBOO volunteers and staff. The theme of the day is Resistance to Tyranny. Featured speakers include Chris Hedges on Empire and Capitalism, newly released prisoner Eric McDavid, Native American activist Winona LaDuke, and a presentation of the works produced here at KBOO by our artists-in-residence Tessie Word and Marissa Anderson. The full schedule can be found online at kboo.fm. Tune in all day Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. for Resistance to Tyranny. And remember to support this community resource, KBOO.
Begin organizing in your community. For people, planet, and peace over profit. Join us.
exceptional U.S. American people destined to bring order out of chaos, to stimulate economic growth, and to replace savagery with civilization, not just in North America, but throughout the world, proved to have enormous staying power.
KABU is co-sponsoring three talks by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, a longtime Indigenous rights activist, scholar, renowned feminist, and author of the new book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. Wednesday, February 18th, she will be speaking at PSU's Native American Student and Community Center from 6 to 9 p.m. She will also be speaking at PCC Cascade and Reed College. For more details, check our events calendar on kabu.fm on the right-hand side of the page.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from U.S. Agencies Credit Union, investing in charitable funds in the local community since 1936. Information on how to submit a giving request available at usacu.org/giving. You're listening to Rose City Native Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Joining me is Ender for our very special membership drive. Special! With Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, we will be playing a talk that she gave in Berkeley on October 2nd at First Congressional Church. But first is our new segment by Ender called Roar of the Earth. Ender, take it away.
I'm here. head pedal.
Try and win, try and win. Imbue me with your spirit so everyone can see your mother. For this place to remember all that is sacred and all that really matters in the world and all that matters in existence.
Turtle Island is a place that was chosen by the Great Spirit to be a place of reunion, a place where all tribes of humanity would come together, join hands, and embrace the next step in our collective consciousness. The journey the universe has put this land on for the entirety of its existence has been a journey of perfect spirituality, then a journey of war, a brief journey of certain social disorder, the era we live on, and ultimately our future holds our great goal, an era of unification and recognition of wisdom. Native Turtle Islanders, or Native Americans, were given a great challenge. The challenge of meeting and accepting their brothers and sisters from across the vast Eastern Ocean. And this challenge is still valid. Listen well wherever you come from. The purpose of the Native American is to teach. And this challenge is something that will be pivotal for the new era. The future of Turtle Island will see a perfect amalgamation of science and spirituality. The brotherhood of man and sisterhood of woman will be ours, and Turtle Island will become the great beacon of light for the world. Heart and reason, our next step.
Thank you, Ender. That was Roar of the Earth, our weekly segment that we'll be playing. And we have some lovely ladies joining us today. Let's say hello. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Jackie.
Hi.
Jackie. Hi, I'm Del, and I'm here with Karen.
Hi, Del. Hi, Jackie.
With Karen, both of us have been listening to Ender's segment he produces every week. And this is one of the segments that Roasted and Native Radio is bringing you on a weekly basis. Lots of exciting things on the show this evening, and we really hope that you would call and show your support of KBOO Community Radio. The number to call is 877-500-5266, or you could also go online at kboo.fm, and there you can click on the donate button on the right hand corner and follow the process on there. We've been coming now for over a week to you to ask you to show your support for community radio, and tonight, this particular hour, we are asking you to show your support for Native American programming on KBOO. This is a long history of Native programming, and it is worth honoring, perpetuating, continuing. New generations are working on the program currently, and this is what you are honoring tonight when you call 877-500-5266 to make your donation.
Yes, Del, it is so exciting to see such young and the youth, the energy in that air room tonight, the beautiful singing. Jackie Maltstrom has taken over from the long history of Native American reporting here on KBOO, and they are bringing you Native American news, views, traditional and contemporary music. That, where else do you hear this? But on
where
KBOO.
Else?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And we would love you to call. Show your love. Show your support for this wonderful Native American programming. Call now. now at
877-500-5266. And Jackie is about to play some audio this evening from Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, who is going to be in town next week. And she has a book that just came out, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. If you would like to get this book as a thank you gift, you could call us right now with a minimum donation of $60, 877-500-5266 is the number to call. And whenever our volunteers pick up the phone, let them know that this is the book that you would like. But maybe, you know, you are more interested tonight in actually jewelry and beadwork, because Jackie Malmstrom, the host of Rose City Native Radio, has actually handcrafted herself bracelets that spell KBOO on it. And this could also be your thank you for contributing to your favorite community radio station this evening. Again, a minimum donation of $60 this evening, 877-500-5266 is the number to call, or online at kboo.fm.
Thank you, Delphine. And yes, we will be going straight into our talk. We want to thank Letters in Politics, KPFA Berkeley, for allowing us to use this audio. So this is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz reading one of the chapters from her book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. Enjoy.
I'm going to read from chapter 10. It's titled The Ghost Dance Prophecy, A Nation is Coming. The whole world is coming, a nation is coming, a nation is coming. The eagle has brought the message to the tribe. That's from a Lakota ghost dance song. And from Wallace Black Elk in 1973, Little Wounded Knee is turned into a giant world. So the first part of this I call the new frontier. 70 years after the Wounded Knee Massacre, when the conquest of the continent was said to have been complete, and with Hawaii and Alaska made into states, rounding out the 50 stars on today's flag, the myth of an exceptional U.S. American people destined to bring order out of chaos, to stimulate economic growth, and to replace savagery with civilization, not just in North America but throughout the world, proved to have enormous staying power. A key to John F. Kennedy's political success was that he revived the frontier as a trope of populist imperialism, openly based on the drama and popular myth of settling the continent, of, quote, taming a different sort of, quote, wilderness. In Kennedy's acceptance speech at the 1960 Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles, historian Richard Slotkin writes, the presidential nominee asked his audience to see him as a new kind of frontiersman confronting a different sort of wilderness. Kennedy said, I stand tonight facing west on what was once the last frontier. From the lands that stretched 3,000 miles behind me, the pioneers of old gave up their safety, their comfort, and sometimes their lives to build a new world here in the west. We stand today on the edge of the new frontier, a frontier of unknown opportunities and paths, a frontier of unfulfilled hopes and threats, unquote. Kennedy's use of the new frontier to encapsulate his campaign echoed debates about U.S. history that had begun more than six decades earlier. In 1894, historian Frederick Jackson Turner had presented the history-making frontier thesis, as he called it, claiming that the crisis of that era was the result of the closing of the frontier, and that a new frontier was needed to fill the ideological and spiritual vacuum created by the completion of settler colonialism. The so-called Turner thesis served as a dominant school of history of the U.S. West through most of the 20th century. The frontier metaphor described Kennedy's plan for employing political power to make the world the new frontier of the United States, Central to this vision was the Cold War, what Slotkin calls, quote, a heroic engagement in the long twilight struggle against communism, to which the nation was summoned, as Kennedy characterized it in his inaugural address. Soon after he took office, that struggle took the form of counterinsurgency programs in Vietnam. Quote, 7 years after Kennedy's nomination, American troops would be describing Vietnam as Indian country and search and destroy missions as a game of cowboys and Indians. And Kennedy's ambassador to Vietnam would justify a massive military escalation by citing the necessity of moving, quote, the Indians away from the, quote, fort so that the, quote, settlers could plant, quote, corn, an invention of the native people's corn. The movement of indigenous peoples to undo what generations of frontier expansionists had wrought continued during the Vietnam War era and won some major victories, but more importantly, a shift in consensus, will, and vision towards self-determination and land restitution, which prevails today. Activist efforts to end termination and secure restoration of land, particularly sacred sites, included Taos Pueblo's 64-year-old struggle with the U.S. government to reclaim their sacred Blue Lake in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains of New Mexico. In the first land restitution to any indigenous nation, President Richard M. Nixon signed into effect Public Law 91-550 on December 15, 1970, which had been approved with bipartisan majorities in Congress. I can tell you this would not have happened without the seizure and keeping Alcatraz for 18 months. Just ended. President Nixon stated, "This is a bill that represents justice because in 1906 an injustice was done in which the land involved in this bill, 48,000 acres, was taken from the Taos Pueblo Indians. The Congress of the United States now returns that land to whom it belongs." In hearings held in the preceding years by the Senate Subcommittee on Indian Affairs, members expressed fear of establishing a precedent of awarding land based on ancient use treaties or Aboriginal ownership rather than monetary payment. As one witness testifying in opposition to the return of Taos land said, quote, "The history of the land squabbles in New Mexico among various groups of people, including Indian Americans and Spanish Americans, is well known. Substantially, every acre of our public domain, be it national forests, state parks, or wilderness areas, is threatened by claims from various groups who say they have some ancestral right to the land to the exclusion of all other persons, which can only be fostered and encouraged by the present legislation if passed." Although the Senate subcommittee members finally agreed to the Taos claim by satisfying themselves that it was unique, it did in fact set a precedent. The return of Blue Lake as a sacred site begs the question of whether other indigenous sacred sites remaining as national or state parks or as U.S. Forest Service or Bureau of Land Management lands and waterways should be returned. Administration of the Grand Canyon National Park has been partially restored to its ancestral caretakers. The Havasupai Nation, but other federal lands have not. A few sites, such as the volcanic El Malpai, a sacred site for the Pueblo Indians, have been designated as national monuments by executive order rather than restored as indigenous sacred territory.
And we'll be right back with Roxanne after these messages from our lovely ladies over at Membership Central. Hello, ladies.
Hi, Kathy. or Jackie.
Jackie.
Sorry.
It's okay.
And we are listening to author and historian Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. She is the author of An Indigenous People's History of the United States. And Dunbar Ortiz challenges the founding myth of the United States and shows how policy against the indigenous peoples was genocidal and imperialist, designed to crush the original inhabitants. Told from the viewpoint of the indigenous, the book reveals how Native Americans for centuries actively resisted expansion of the U.S. empire. And for a $60 minimum pledge, you can own this book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. Call us now, 877-500-5266, or you can go online at kboo.fm and click on the tip jar up in the right-hand corner of the screen, and we make it very easy for you to donate to KABU, support this Native American radio program. Del?
Yeah, thank you, Karen. I think it's so important. Roxanne's book is very important. Native American radio programming is so important. And what, you know, some of you folks listening might not realize is that really we reach really far. Lots of people listen to Rosetta Native Radio. Lots of people listen and have been listening for years to the Native programming on KABU. And if you are one of these people, if you really would like to support this kind of programming to continue to be brought to you week after week by dynamic young people like Ander and like Jackie, please give us a call, 877-500-5266. And as a thank you, Jackie handcrafted some beautiful beaded bracelets with seed beads that spell KABU. And this can be your thank you gift when you call us with a $60 donation. You could give us $60 right now, or you can also give us $5 a month, for example, if you would like, for the next year. And this is a great way to be to sustain KABU. The kind of interviews that Rosetta Native Radio is bringing you, it's incredible, but there's also a lot of work that happened behind the scene, and I think it's a great time to give a shout out to all of our friends and brothers in the Oregon State Penitentiary. We enjoy visiting them. We are looking forward to the next meeting in March, and this is the kind of work that we do. This is what Jackie Mostrom is dedicated to, reaching out to the community inside and outside. And it is very important that you show your support for this kind of programming, this kind of quality outreach. Is not just what comes out over the airwaves, it's about the community building. 877-500-5266 is the number to call.
And standing by, waiting for your call, are Emily, Pooh, Rob, and Dina B.
Yeah.
And they're waiting to hear the phones ring and show your love, show your support for Native American radio programming here on KABU. Call again. The number is 877-500-5266.
Thank you so much. All right, so we will be getting back to our talk with Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz here on KBOO Portland.
The most prominent struggle has been the Lakota Sioux's attempt to restore the Pahasapa, or the Black Hills, where the odious Mount Rushmore carvings have scarred the sacred site. Called the Shrine of Democracy by the federal government, it is anything but that. Rather, it is a shrine of in-your-face illegal occupation and colonialism. The return of House Blue Lake was not a gift from above. In addition to the six-decade struggle of Taos Pueblo, the restitution took place in the middle of renewed, powerful, and growing Native American struggle for self-determination. The movement's energy was evident when 26 young Native activists and students founded the National Indian Youth Council, NIYC, in 1961, based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. From 21 different Native nations, some from reservations or small towns, and others from relocated families far from home, The founders included Gloria Emerson and Herb Blatchford, both Dene, Navajo, Clyde Warrior, Ponca from Oklahoma, Mel Tom, Paiute from Nevada, and Shirley Hill Witt, Mohawk. Cherokee anthropologist Robert K. Thomas mentored the militant young activists. Although primarily committed to local struggles, their vision was international. As Shirley Hill Witt put it, at a time when new nations all over the globe are emerging from colonial control, their right to choose their own course places a vast burden of responsibility upon the most powerful nations to honor and protect those rights. The Indians of the United States may well present the test case of American liberalism. In 1964, the NIYC organized support for the ongoing indigenous struggle to protect treaty-guaranteed fishing rights in Washington state. Actor Marlon Brando took an interest and provided financial support and publicity. The fish-in is interesting because it was civil rights era and there were sit-ins. And Native people being out, you know, rural areas, how did they do a sit-in? Well, they did a fish-in. And then they did a Wounded Knee sit-in a few years later, and an Alcatraz sit-in. So it took a very different form, you know, characteristically of land-based peoples. So the fish-in movement soon put the tiny community at Frank's Landing in the headlines. Sid Mills was arrested there on October 13, 1968. Eloquently, he explained his actions. I am a Yakima and Cherokee Indian and a man. For 2 years and 4 months, I've been a soldier in the United States Army. I served in combat in Vietnam until critically wounded. I hereby renounce further obligation in service or duty to the United States Army. My first obligation now lies with the Indian people fighting for the lawful treaty to fish in usual and accustomed waters of Nisqually, Columbia, and other rivers of the Pacific Northwest, and in serving them in this fight in any way possible. He goes on, just 3 years ago today, on October 13, 1965, 19 women and children were brutalized by more than 45 armed agents of the state of Washington at Frank's Landing on the Nisqually River in a vicious, unwarranted attack. Interestingly, the oldest human skeleton remains ever found in the Western Hemisphere were recently uncovered on the banks of the Columbia River, the remains of Indian fishermen. What kind of government or society would spend millions of dollars to pick up our bones, restore our ancestral life patterns, and protect our ancient remains from damage, while at the same time eating upon the flesh of our living people? We will fight for our rights. Hank Adams, with other local leaders, founded the Survival for American Indians Association, which was composed of the Squamish, the Nisqually, Yakima, Paiute, the Stillaguamish, and other indigenous peoples of the Pacific Northwest to carry on the fishing rights struggle. The backlash from Anglo sports fishers was swift and violent. But in 1973, 14 of the fishing nations sued Washington State in court. And in a reflection of changed times, the following year, after the year after Wounded Knee, U.S. District Court Judge George Bolt found in their favor. He validated their right to 50% of fish taken in the usual and accustomed places that were designated in the 1850s treaties, even where those places were not under tribal control. This was a landmark decision for historical indigenous sovereignty over territories outside of designated reservation boundaries. The National Indian Youth Council saw itself as an engine for igniting local organizing, marshaling community organizing projects with access to funds from the Johnson administration, war on poverty, the mandate of which was to implement the principles of economic and social equality intended by authors of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Inter-ethnic alliances, including a significant representation of Native peoples, developed during the mid-1960s. These culminated in the 1968 Four Peoples Campaign, spearheaded by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., which consisted of community organizing and leading marches across the country. In the final months of the campaign planning, Dr. King was assassinated on April 4, 1968. Thousands of marchers arrived in Washington, D.C. in the next month and gathered in a tent city, Resurrection City, that remained there for 6 weeks. While local actions multiplied in Native communities and nations, the spectacular November 1969 seizure, November 20th, soon the 45th anniversary is coming, and the 18-month occupation of Alcatraz Island in the San Francisco Bay grabbed wide media attention. An alliance known as the Indians of All Tribes was initiated by Native American students and community members living in the Bay Area. They built a thriving village on the island that drew Native pilgrimages from all over the continent, radicalizing thousands, especially Native youth. Indigenous women leaders were particularly impressive, among them Madonna Thunderhawk, Lanada Means, Warjack, Raina Ramirez, and many others who continued organizing into the 21st century. The proclamation of the Indians of All Tribes expressed the level of indigenous solidarity. We, the Native Americans, reclaim the land known as Alcatraz Island in the name of all of American Indians by right of discovery. So, a little. So there was a lot of humor or satire. So despite this riff on the history of U.S. colonialism, the group made serious demands for five institutions to be established on Alcatraz. And why don't we have them yet? A Center for Native American Studies, an American Indian Spiritual Center, and an Indian Center of Ecology that would do scientific research on reversing pollution of water and air. This is, you know, like 45 years ago. A great Indian training school that would run a restaurant, provide job training, market indigenous arts, and teach the, quote, noble and tragic events of Indian history, including the Trail of Tears and the Massacre of Wounded Knee. And a memorial, a reminder that the island had been established as a prison initially to incarcerate and execute California Indian resistors to U.S. assault on their nations. And in fact, the first in prison were actually Hopi families who refused to allow the federal government to take their children off to federal boarding schools. Under orders of the Nixon White House, the indigenous residents remained on Alcatraz until they were forced to evacuate in June 1971. Indigenous professors Jack Forbes and David Risling, who were in the process of establishing Native American studies programs at the University of California, Davis, negotiated a grant from the federal government of unused land near Davis, where the institutions demanded by Alcatraz occupants could be established. A two-year Native American Chicano College and Movement Center, DQ University, was founded, while UC Davis became the first U.S. university to offer a doctorate in Native American studies, a very prestigious degree now, these days.
We're going to be taking a short musical break here. This is Ulali with Idle No More.
Yeah. KBOO would like to thank our community partners who donated food for our volunteers today. Please call 877-500-5266 to show your support today. Breakfast was provided by Gravy, located at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue. Open at 7:30 a.m. every day and serving breakfast till 3 p.m. Serving lunch on weekdays after 11 a.m. Lunch was provided by Elephant's Delicatessen, making local food from scratch since 1979. With 8 locations in the Portland metro area. Menus and more at elephantsdeli.com. Dinner was provided by Reverend's Barbecue, located in Selwood at 7712 Southeast 13th Avenue, serving smoked brisket, chopped pork, and fried chicken. Family-friendly and open daily at 11:30 a.m., with happy hour from 4 to 6 p.m.
You're listening to Rose City Native Radio. This is your favorite radio station, KBOO. Don't you love it? This is the place where you get to hear what matters to you. This is the place where you get to be exposed to the true, real history of what happened to the Native people, especially on the West Coast, as Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz has been reading from her book, Chapter 10 of her book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. If you are familiar with A People's History of the United States Howard Zinn. Thank you so much for the volunteer. Howard Zinn, if you are familiar with his book, well, this is in the tradition of it. So give us a call and show your support to KBOO, 877-500-5266 is the number to call. And we want to thank Heather, who is renewing from Southeast Portland. Thank you, Heather. Woo. And we also want to thank Emily, brand new member from Northeast Portland. Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much, Heather and Emily, for showing your support to Native American programming, Native American sovereignty. This is what we are doing here. We are showing you what can be done, what is the true, real story, and you are apparently enjoying, Heather and Emily are enjoying. If you are, just like Heather and Emily, enjoying what you are listening to every time you tune into Rose City Native Radio, you should give us a call, and we have awesome gifts, right, Karen?
Yes, we sure do. We have beautiful beaded bracelets made by our own host of Radio City Native Radio. We have beaded bracelets.
Karen string them on.
Yes, they are. They're beautiful. I'm gonna have to take one of these, Jackie. They're just absolutely gorgeous. And they tie. And I, you know, it's Valentine's Day, and I would like to invite everyone to, mm-hmm. For the KBOO lover in your life, or just for the lover in your life. These make a wonderful gift just for a $60 donation, minimum $60.
And you are a member of KBOO too.
Yeah, and a member of KBOO. Can't beat that, right?
I know.
Wow. And also for $60, whatever, what's your pleasure? You can have the book by What You're Hearing Tonight by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. And this is a different view of the news. Mm-hmm. How many of you have heard this history of Alcatraz before? And from the Native American perspective. So call now. The number is 877-500-5266. We make it so easy for you to donate. How else can they donate, Del?
Well, people can donate maybe by coming to visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Come on in, walk in, give us a hug, talk to Jackie. Let her tell you about the bracelet that she just beaded for you.
And we can show them, too.
Yeah, you can come check them out and maybe pick whichever color you would like if you are donated the right amount, $60. And or you can also mail us your support, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97232. And also, you could go online, kboo.fm. On the right-hand corner, there is a tip jar. This process is very simple, fast, secure. Or if you like Human Voice, then please give us a call. We have amazing volunteers that are waiting for you to call. We have Emily, Pooh, Rob, and Dina B that are there. 877-500-5266 is the number to call, or online at kboo.fm.
And thank you to everyone who's called in during the show. Thank you so much. Your support is helping us bring Native news and music and issues to all of Oregon. And now we return to Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz.
During the period of intense protests and activism, alliances among indigenous governments, including the National Congress of American Indians, led by young Sioux attorney Vine Deloria Jr., turned militant demands into legislation. A year before the seizure of Alcatraz, Anishinaabe activists Dennis Banks and Clyde Bellacourt founded the American Indian Movement, which initially patrolled the streets around indigenous housing projects in Minneapolis. Going national, AIM became involved in Alcatraz. With a rather bitter end of the island occupation, the future of Indian activism would belong to people far angrier than the student brigades of Alcatraz. With the Vietnam War still raging and the re-election of Richard Nixon in November 1972 imminent, a coalition of 8 indigenous organizations, the American Indian Movement, the National Indian Brotherhood of Canada, later renamed the Assembly of First Nations, the Native American Rights Fund, the Native Indian Youth Council, the Native American, the National American Indian Council, the National Council on Indian Work, National Indian Leadership Training, and the American Indian Committee on Alcohol and Drug Abuse organized the Trail of Broken Treaties. Armed with a 20-point position paper that focused on federal government's responsibility to implement indigenous treaties and sovereignty, the caravan set out in the fall of 1972. The vehicles and numbers of participants multiplied at each stop, converging in Washington, D.C. 1 week before the presidential election. Hanging a banner from the front of the Bureau of Indian Affairs building that proclaimed that it to be the Native American Embassy, hundreds of protesters hailing from 75 indigenous nations entered the building to sit in. Finally, sitting in a building. BIA personnel at the time, largely non-indigenous, freaked out and fled, and the Capitol Police chain-locked the doors, announcing that the indigenous protesters were illegally occupying the building. They couldn't get out. The protesters stayed for 6 days, enough time for them to read damning federal documents that reveal gross mismanagement of the federal trust responsibility, which they boxed up and took with them. Before the Cobell case that was based on some of these documents that were taken at that time. The Trail of Broken Treaties solidified Indigenous alliances in the 20-point position paper. The work mainly of Hank Adams provided a template for the affinity of hundreds of Native organizations. 5 years later, in 1977, the document would be presented to the United Nations, forming the basis for the 2007 Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. 3 months after the BIA building takeover, Oglala Lakota traditional people at Pine Ridge Sioux Reservation in South Dakota invited the American Indian Movement to assist them in halting collusion between their tribal government, formed under the terms of the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, and the federal government that had crushed the people and further impoverished them. The people opposed the increasingly authoritarian reign of the elected tribal chairman, Richard Wilson. They invited AIM to send a delegation to support them. On February 27, 1973, long deliberations took place in the Pine Ridge Calico Hall between the local people and the AIM leaders, led by Russell Means, a citizen of Pine Ridge. The AIM activists were well known following the Trail of Broken Treaties caravan, and upon AIM's arrival, the FBI, tribal police, and the chairman's armed special unit, the Guardians of the Oglala Nations, they like to call themselves the Goon Squad, mobilized. The meeting ended with a consensus decision to go to Wounded Knee in a caravan to protest the chairman's misdeeds and the violence of his goons. The law enforcement contingent followed and circled the protesters. Over the following days, hundreds of more armed men surrounded Wounded Knee, and so began a 2.5-month siege of protesters at the 1890 massacre site. The late 20th century hamlet of Wounded Knee was made up of little more than a trading post, a Catholic church, and the mass grave of hundreds of Lakota slaughtered in 1890. Now armed personnel carriers, Huey helicopters, and military snipers surrounded the site, while supply teams of mostly Lakota women made their way through the military lines and back out again through the dark of night. So this period of time between the so-called closing of the frontier, marked by the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre, and the 1973 Siege of Wounded Knee, which marks the beginning of indigenous decolonization in North America, is illuminated by following the historical experience of the Lakota people. So I do that in this section. I will hope that you will read this carefully. But what traditional translator and leader Matthew King, Lakota, the late Matthew King, a Lakota, has described the United States throughout its history as alternating between a peace policy and a war policy in its relations with indigenous nations and communities. Matthew saying that these pendulum swings coincided with the strength and weakness of Native resistance. Between the alternatives of extermination and termination, which were war policies, genocidal, and preservation, peace policy, like the Indian Reorganization Act. King argued there were interim periods characterized simply by benign neglect and assimilation. With organized indigenous resistance to war programs and policies, concessions are granted. When pressure lightens, new schemes are developed to separate Indians from their land, resources, and cultures. Scholars, politicians, policymakers, and the media rarely term U.S. policy toward indigenous peoples as colonialism. King, however, believed that his people's country had been a colony of the United States since 1890.
And now back to Membership Central with our lovely ladies joining us. Hello.
Hello, Jackie. And thank you so much for bringing us this talk this evening. And would like to say also thank you to Paul for helping with editing this. It's very incredible to be able to hear Roxanne Dubber Ortiz reading from a chapter of her book, a chapter with fascinating history about Native American occupation of Alcatraz and other very significant events that have happened throughout the history, and especially concerning Natives from the West Coast in this particular chapter. But in her book, she covers a whole lot of history, an indigenous people's history of the United States, really taking a look at American history from a Native American perspective. It's not done every day, and especially not in this kind of format. So if you would like a copy of the book, you can give us a call, 877-500-5266. And for a $60 minimum donation, you can have the book. And you could give this donation all at once, $60. Maybe you send us a check. Maybe you we get it out of your credit card or checking account. It doesn't really matter. Or you would like maybe to do a monthly deduction of $5 a month. And really, if you have more than $60, we would like to encourage you to donate as much as you are able to this evening.
Yes, if you are a renewing member, why don't you increase your donation by maybe $5, $10 a month, and we make it so easy for you. You can call us just like Roger did from Albany. He's a new member. Thank you, Roger. Roger knows the value of Rose City Native Radio,
yes,
and of KABU. And where do you hear this type of, you said it's great to hear the author.
Mm-hmm.
Where else are you going to hear the author but on KABU, your local radio, community radio station? And so call right now, 877-500-5266. We have wonderful folks standing by to take your call, to take your donation, and let us know. Let us know what you enjoy about the programming tonight. We'd love to hear your comments.
Yes.
And you can go online at kboo.fm. Click on the tip jar up in the right-hand corner. We make it so easy. We can take your debit or credit cards and just make an do an automatic transfer.
Yeah.
Right, Del?
Absolutely. And also, you know, if maybe reading is not your thing and you'd rather just listen to Roxanne Dubber Ortiz, she is going to be in town. Please go to the Facebook for Rose City Native Radio, and you will find out more information about the different places where she is going to be speaking. But also, if you are not interested in a book, maybe you are interested in jewelry.
Yes.
This is prime jewelry made by the nice hands of our host, Jackie Malmstrom. She spent hours and hours making these.
Yeah.
She designed them.
Yes.
She designed them herself, and they are unique pieces. There's only a few of them. So if you are interested in maybe treating your honey to a nice bracelet, which is adjustable, it will fit everybody because it just ties on. So it's very easy if you are concerned about that. It will fit anybody. Give us a call now, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm.
I want to thank everybody for donating and listening today. I hope you enjoyed the talk. If you would like to hear Roxanne Dubber Ortiz speak about her latest book, The Indigenous People's History of the United States, she will be at the PSU Native American Student Center, which is located at 710 Southwest Jackson Street. That's on Wednesday, February 18th at 6 p.m. Portland Parks and Rec is looking for Native artists to commission for a an art piece on the South Waterfront. A tour of the site will be on February 23rd. Again, Portland Parks and Rec is looking for Native artists who can do a commission for the waterfront. So if you're interested in that, we will be posting a link on our Facebook page. And for more information, you can call 503-823-5111. Naya Canoe Journey is calling for artists as well. They need a logo for their family canoe journey. There is up to $250 in prizes. The deadline for submissions is March 1st. You can find more info on this at nayapdx.org or again on our Facebook page. And finally, an honor ceremony for Alex McLeod, retired CEO of NARA, will be February 25th at 11 a.m. at the NARA Outpatient Center, located at 1631 Southwest